Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation post-Thanksgiving show. You know, as the show ended before Thanksgiving when I was on the air last week, I said to you, since Obama's cooking America, we'll cook a turkey, and I gave you a turkey recipe. I was in a restaurant over the weekend, and a guy comes up to me, and he says to me, Michael, my nephew called me from another city, and he said to me, did you hear what Michael Savage said the other day? He said, since Obama's cooking America, we'll cook a turkey. I laughed because what I learned from that is that people remember the simple stuff. They really don't remember the complicated stuff on the show because they've got a lot going on in their mind. They can remember a thing like that. So today you wake up and you see that Tiger Woods is not answering his telephone, and everyone knows what really happened. I mean, the minute I saw the story, the way I read it was, enraged wife runs after husband, bashes in window with golf club. I mean, what did you read? I need someone to tell me what happened? Okay, now we know the girlfriend already came out. Oh, yeah, she's trying to extricate him from a car by breaking glass and pulling him through broken glass? Yeah, well, maybe they do that in Sweden. But I haven't seen that done in America. Maybe that's the Swedish method of extracting a cheating husband from a car. Pull him through broken glass. So I don't know, you know, you don't know what's going to be on your mind. I'm sleeping like everyone else, thank God, in the middle of the night. I wake up early in the morning. First call, 5:30, to take the dog out in the backyard. And I laughed to myself because this comes to my consciousness. I said, did Tiger's Woody drive her? And I started to laugh. I actually started to laugh because I thought it was funny. But, you know, how does this guy think that by canceling meeting with the police, the people can't put two and two together? Now, admittedly, he's the best golfer in the world. Let's not take that away from him. But, you know, folks, let's be clear with each other. The image of Tiger Woods as the best human being on earth is very similar to another man, and his name is Obama. Another man who has had packagers and handlers and image makers surround him from the beginning. They have groomed this man to be president, and we now see the wreckage he is leaving in his wake. At least with Tiger Woods, we know he's a great golfer. With Obama, we don't know what he's great at. And speaking about that, there's more to talk about here on the Savage Nation. The cop killing, I'm trying to avoid it because it's heartbreaking. I have in my family, very close in my family, a person in law enforcement. We went to dinner last night, and frankly, we talked about nothing but the execution of four police officers in an ambush at a coffee house. That's all we talked about. The fact of the matter is Huxtable granted clemency to this man who executed the four cops. Now, who is Huxtable? You know him as Huckabee. I have called him Huxtable from the minute he arrived on the scene. The reason I called a Governor Huxtable is because I believe he's a huckster. I never bought his act from day one. To me, he was a clear-cut huckster. How you people could go for this guy and think he'd be a good president, you know, it bewilders me. How simple and naive people really are out there. Fox News gives him a show, so already he's a legitimate candidate. I told you what he was 2 years ago. Now it turns out that it was Huxtable who released this dangerous felon. I have the proclamation in my hand, and we put it up on michaelsavage.com. I have the proclamation of why he granted clemency to this alleged cop killer. And you know and I know why he did this. The reason he granted clemency to Maurice Clemens, the alleged executioner of the cops, the reason Governor Huckabee did it when he was governor of Arkansas is simply to appease a certain large voting bloc in Arkansas. I mean, let's be clear. That's all. That's all. It's as simple as that. So if you want to see Huckabee's proclamation, whatever, you want to get into the hard news, go ahead. Go to michaelsavage.com. If you don't go, I won't die one way or the other. But the killing of cops in Washington State by a man allegedly paroled by Huckabee is an amazing story. It means Huckabee is no different than the rest of the political pack. And he definitely, frankly, if he drops out of the presidential field, thank God, who needs him? And then there's this fabulous story about the machine behind Tiger Woods, that I think we have to talk about. If you have a Tiger Woods joke you'd rather tell, let's hear him already. Let's hear already the Tiger Woods jokes and get it over with. And you know, let's clear up the thing, because before we go into ClimateGate, I actually have a climate scientist on at 3:30, one of the leading climate scientists in the world, the man who they allegedly wanted to kill. In emails going back and forth between the fraudsters and ClimateGate, there's a couple where they say, the next time I see this guy, we're going to kill him. I mean, they meant it metaphorically. I understand that. Meanwhile, they put it in writing. So, you know what I love is, like, a lot of these people from Hollywood who are so into global warming, who don't know anything about science, they try to browbeat people by saying, you don't know anything about it. These are peer-reviewed articles. And when you hear the word peer, you're supposed to jump back and say, ooh, peer-reviewed. Do you know what a peer-reviewed article means in science today? Nothing. A peer-reviewed article means it's a club, a fraternity, a gang that excludes anyone who's not in the group. And if anyone has an outsider view or a dissident view, he's not in that peer group. So a peer group consists of scientists who want to give each other pats on the back in plain English. It means nothing, largely nothing. I'm going to remind you what happened a couple of centuries ago to a great innovative scientist named Charles Darwin. Many of you know who Darwin is. He developed the theory of evolution through careful study. Now, let's not argue over the theory of evolution per se. I'm not here to discuss that. When Charles Darwin went before the Royal Society of whatever it was to present his discoveries on his theory of evolution, the old line scientists said the following, because I was a student of science and I have a PhD in a real science, unlike you. And here is what, because I used to study all of this. I was fascinated by science and scientific biography. They said to Darwin, Darwin says, I have this theory of evolution. So the old guys said to the young scientist, all that you present that is old is true, and all that you present is new is false. That's what peer review means. Peer review means that the gang that wants a certain fact gotten out there will be getting that fact out there. And then anybody who discovers anything new, if he's not in that gang, those facts are never published. They never see the light of day. That's if anyone can be in science today at all who's innovative. I kind of doubt it. Oh, I have a lot more to say about this. Now, over the weekend, a survey was done, Beowulf, which I didn't get from you, I don't think, unless it's in the pack, on the most popular conservatives. Did you send that to me? Did I get it? Oh. Hey, let's play some Glenn Miller, the one I asked for, which is the one I like the best. Chattanooga Choo Choo, I love it. Let's hear that right now. Let's take a
boy.
There you go.
Is that the Chattanooga Choo Choo? Right on track 29. Boy, you can give me a shot.
See, this is when America was great. Before it became infested.
To board a Chattanooga Choo Choo. I've got my fare.
This is when the boys could go and whip Hitler's behind. Now they go to Afghanistan. If they beat up a terrorist, they're given a court-martial. Five SEALs are given a court-martial by Obama's boys in the military. The frauds in the military. Turn that off. Turn that off. You want to talk about frauds in science? How about frauds in military uniforms who sit there calling themselves chiefs of staff and generals, who take five Navy SEALs who captured a wanted terrorist and slapped them around, and they put them in a court-martial? Tell me about the military gate. I'll be right back.
Savage.
On the Savage Nation. I don't know why. I heard some of this over the weekend, and I liked it. I guess it went along with the roasting chestnuts over the week. You know, people called last Wednesday, and we were talking about how to cook a turkey. And one gentleman asked me, what else am I going to serve? And I forgot to tell you, I always serve chestnuts, because to me that's, I don't know, that's Thanksgiving as much as anything. A couple of hours before the dinner, people are gathering before you, you know, whatever. It's very, on one hand, it's very easy to cook chestnuts. On the other hand, if you don't know what you're doing, they'll blow up in the oven. I remember when I was young and the kids were kids and I wanted to, like, do a real Thanksgiving. I cooked chestnuts. What did I know? You think you know everything when you're in your 30s, right? I put them in the oven. They blew up, ruined. The whole oven was a nightmare. A little thing like you have to cut an X on the flat side of every chestnut, cut through the hard outer shell with an X, is as simple as that. Then, you know, 4 1/4 for about 15 to 20 minutes. Remove them from the oven. No oil. Don't oil them. And then you peel them immediately when they come out of the oven. Because if you don't peel them, they'll harden and you won't be able to get them out. You'll have to heat them again. Everybody who eats them without anything on them loves chestnuts. It reminds me of the Chestnut Man. That's why. Because when I was 11, I used to go into Manhattan with a friend of mine who I haven't seen in years by train. And we go to the Museum of Natural History. We go all over the city alone. You know, Hubert's Flea Circus and a few other sordid places by subway. 11, 12. And one of the places we like to go is the New York Museum of Natural History. I love that place. The dinosaurs, the gems, you name it. The primitives. In fact, my first diorama that I ever saw of a tropical island was in the Museum of Natural History. That's what drove me to the plant collecting business many, many decades later. Believe it or not, I always wanted to be in the tropics collecting plants, you know, like a Frank Buck, bring them back alive. But I didn't want to collect animals. I wanted to collect plants because they can't scream. Anyway, outside the museum, there was always like what they call homeless today. There were no homeless then. They were just bums. And some of the bums who needed to make a living would sell chestnuts. They were usually alcoholic or disturbed one way or another. But some of them tried to make a buck. They didn't collect a check from Obama. So they had to do something for a living. So some of them, they'd rent like a chestnut cart. They'd have coal under it. And they would cook chestnuts. I don't know if it's still done in New York today. Probably. Who knows? Today's probably college graduates from Harvard doing it. And this Bimmy would sell the chestnuts. I remember to this day, like on right outside the southeast whatever corner, my friend and I are standing there, and the Bimmy is serving us the chestnuts in a little bag. I can remember it to this day. And he starts to try to come on to us. And he says, "You guys like to see dirty pictures?" You know, right? So we started to laugh because it was so obvious the guy was a perv. And to be avoided, we weren't, you know, idiots. I mean, we were young kids, but we knew what was coming. So we put him on a little. "Will you guys like to see some dirty pictures?" said the Chestnut Man. Well, needless to say, we didn't go see any dirty pictures, but the Chestnut Man is lucky he didn't get rolled down a set of subway stairs. See, in those days, we weren't given training on how to avoid perverts. We just knew how to avoid perverts, which is to punch him in the nose. 1-800-449-82. We didn't have to consult the book the way they do today. And we weren't on medication where we didn't know a perv from a golfer, whatever. Houston, Texas, Stephen, you're on the Savage Nation topic. Please go ahead.
Dr. Savage, I can't believe I'm calling in about Tiger Woods, but it's the only time I've been able to get through to you. My wife was in a head-on collision a couple of years ago with our Lincoln Navigator, and it threw the battery, and the only way to get her out of the car was to break the back window. You can't unlock the car.
So the Swedish bimbo wife was actually helping him out of the car, you believe?
Actually, not really. I believe there was
a lot. Come on, let me ask you something. If he says he was in an accident, how come the airbags didn't deploy?
Well, you know, that's funny because our Lincoln Navigator was totaled. It was a front end.
Forget your Lincoln Navigator. The Swedish bimbo broad wife, trophy wife, breaks the rear window out to pull them through broken glass because that's the way they do it in Sweden? That's how you get cheating husbands out of a car, is you pull them through broken glass? I understand that. That I could buy. So in other words, she broke the glass to pull them over it to see if she can rip them up a little. All right, I buy that. Thanks for the call. Now it makes sense. That's how you take a cheating husband out of the back of a car when he's trying to escape. You break in the rear window of his car, you hope he's unconscious, and you drug him over the broken glass. Okay, I get it. That makes sense now. That's how they do it in Sweden. Okay. 2:30 in the morning. Okay, Michael in New York, another Tiger Woods caller. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely not. down there in South Florida, there's nothing going on 2:30 in the morning, especially where he is, you know? He's going to see his Gumana. Let's get it straight.
Well, maybe he was going to save manatees. Maybe there was a manatee life-saving group or something.
Yeah.
Well, she went crazy, though, huh? I mean, that she's some fire hydrant, that one.
I guarantee you, I mean, I hate to say it, but doesn't aim to please. Plain and simple.
I'm sorry, what'd you say, Michael?
You're doing what you're doing.
Bloody face, and the airbag didn't deploy. What kind of accident is it that he hit a fire hydrant at 2 miles an hour? You talk about a slow police chase. This was like a slow accident. How fast could he have been going 3 feet from his driveway?
And he's going...
All right, so he hits a fire hydrant, his face is bloody. Look, let's back it up. They got into an argument. She caught him. She knew about it. First of all, it's all over the media. The girl looks like the other girl, right? You've seen the pictures of her, the one with the steroid lips.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has a thing for girls with steroid lips. That's his business, though, by the way. Incidentally, if he likes girls who look like Heidi and they have steroid lips, that's his business as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
Right? Big deal. I mean, it's not the biggest crime on earth. So anyway, so she catches them. They have an argument. You know, let me tell you something. Let's back the whole thing up. How many of you listening to this show didn't have tension this weekend when family was around? Like, raise your hands. I see no hands going up. Family gatherings, although they are the essence of life and are beautiful, are rife with tension. Now, you take relatives around for 3-4 days, and the cooking and the enforced joviality, a lot of stuff comes to the surface. So what happened is this was a freak out from the turkey and the let's play Christmas and the balls on the tree, and we're all great, blah, blah, blah. That's all.
Savage.
The post-Thanksgiving blues, Savage Nation. We are going to talk about serious stuff in a moment with one of the leading climate scientists the world has ever heard from, or not heard from, actually. But just to finish up on Tiger Woods just for a minute, I have one more throwaway line. Here's a guy who has the finest Swedish meatballs, and he runs for a German dumpling. Patrick J. Michaels joins us now. He's a senior fellow in environmental studies at the Cato Institute. And you say, well, big deal. It is a big deal. You say, well, he's not really a climatologist. He's just a skeptic like you, Savage. Savage, you may have a PhD in epidemiology. What do you know about the climate? Well, he, in fact, was past president of the American Association of State Climatologists, program chair for the Committee on Applied Climatology of the American Meteorological Society, research professor of environmental science at University of Virginia for 30 years. In other words, he knows what he's talking about. In fact, Professor Michaels, one of the leading climate skeptics, knows so much about what he speaks that the climate fraudsters in email said that they'd like to punch him in the nose or worse the next time they saw him. So I thought I would get a scientist in the field on the show who knows what he's talking about and see if we can learn more about ClimateGate. Professor Michaels, welcome to the Savage Nation. Thanks for being with us.
Well, how are you?
I don't know, actually. You know, after all of that tryptophan from the turkey, it's very hard to say. So you are at the center of the whole climate fraud story in the sense that you've been screaming something's wrong from the beginning.
Yeah, I wrote a book, you know, called Climate of Extremes, and I had a chapter on what was happening to the temperature histories. They were always showing more and more warming from the same data, which doesn't seem to make any sense.
Let me see if I can translate that, Professor. Your book, first of all, Climate of Extremes, is it still available? Can people get it anywhere?
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
It's a fine book. But anyway.
No. I mean, but if they go to the internet, they can buy your book. I want them to buy your book, and you'll see how many will. I mean, I make bestsellers. I really do. It's important that they understand what you're saying. You're saying that all the data kept showing warming, which didn't make sense to you?
When the same data would be revised, it would show more warming than the same data showed before. That doesn't make any sense, and that kept on happening. Well, now we read in these emails, these ClimateGate emails, you know, one guy saying, well, let's add 1/15 of a degree to the data to get out the blip. The blip is the embarrassing cooling that occurred.
Oh, my God. They actually were rigging the data by adding temperature to it?
It's what read them and weep. But that's if you think that's bad, the real problem here were the attempts to influence what went into the peer-reviewed literature, basically telling journal editors that, you know, if you publish a paper by this guy or that guy, me being one of this guy, we're going to boycott your journal or things like that.
Oh, well, I told the audience what peer review has come to, unfortunately, which is just basically a club. And anyone who's not a member of the club is excommunicated. It's very much like the old religious orders. I don't think you disagree with that.
You know, Michael, let me give you an example. I'm going to quote you one of these emails. This is from Mike Mann at Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
Either of these papers being in the next IPCC, that's the UN panel, report.
Right.
Kevin
right.
and I will keep them out somehow, even if we have to redefine what the peer-reviewed literature is. Can you believe that? Now,
aren't these the same guys who said when we see Michaels at the next conference, I'm going to kill him?
One that said beat him up. They're tempted to beat me up. You know why? Because I wrote the op-ed in October called The Dog Ate Global Warming. And it was about how this data has all of a sudden disappeared that went into the warming records. The University of East Anglia issued a press release saying we didn't have computer space in the mid-1980s, so we purged the data. Michael, that is BS. Have you ever heard of a 9-inch tape drive?
No.
Well,
no, it's not been eaten. Now, wait a minute. The University of East Anglia has done a U-turn in climate change. They've agreed to publish their figures in full, they just said. Is that true?
Wait a minute. They said they destroyed it a couple months ago. None of this makes sense.
Well, I know none of it makes sense, but they even include threats of violence against you. They say, next time I see Pat Michaels, a climate skeptic, at a scientific meeting, I'll be tempted to beat the crap out of him. Very tempted.
Well, that's Ben Satter. He needs some anger management, you know? You know what?
Well, look, we all know that science should be carefully discussed and analyzed and revised if necessary when new discoveries or new data appear. This is a railroading. It looks like this is a railroading by powers that be. We know why. How come this railroad train can't be stopped?
Well, I think we can stop it. I want to tell you, the guy who heads the United Nations panel is Rajendra Pachauri. And here is what he wrote. Remember I just read you that thing where these guys said, well, we're going to keep these papers out even if we have to redefine what the peer-reviewed literature is?
Yes.
Listen to what he wrote in response. IPCC relies entirely on peer-reviewed literature in carrying out its assessment and follows a process that renders it unlikely that any peer-reviewed piece of literature, however contrary to the views of any individual author, would be left out.
In other words, he doesn't care what anyone says. He's going to accept their lies.
The IPCC would never keep anything out of their reports when these guys are emailing each other about how to keep it out of their reports.
Well, we know the UN is corrupt. Why should we believe a climate scientist? He's probably not even a climate scientist. What is this guy's background at the UN? I'll bet it's not in climate science.
He's an engineer.
Thank you very much. But you're an actual climate scientist. Well, let's boil it down for the average listener. I had a gentleman on 3 years ago who was a climate skeptic to a certain degree. Beowulf, what was his name? I'm sorry. Anyway, he said we're going into a global cooling phase. What is the actual reality here?
The reality is there's no net temperature change for the last 10 or 12 years. That if you could start it, say, I think in 2001, and you get a slight cooling trend. But the reality is that we have these computer models. None of them say this should happen. There's a famous one of these emails has a guy at the National Center for Atmospheric Research saying, you know, we can't explain the lack of warming. And he says it's a travesty. And then he comes on when challenged in public on that and says, oh, I meant that we're not measuring the temperature correctly because it obviously is warmed and yet we don't see any warming. So in one statement, he says the computer models don't work, and then to get out of that statement, he says the data's no good.
But, Professor, when I heard Al Gore say all climate scientists agree, and the science is in. I knew that he was lying, because one thing I know about science is all scientists don't agree on virtually anything. And no matter what the field is, there's never 100% agreement. And moreover, science is something about testing, isn't it? It's not about doxy. And Al Gore and the minions are pushing this doxy on people because there are trillions of dollars at stake. In plain English, that's what it's all about, money and control.
Yeah, well, that has been at the heart of this issue ever since it started. Did you know that the first big global warming hearing that was held in 1988 that broke this thing open, they staged it. It was in Washington, D.C. on June 23rd, and that they turned off the air conditioners in the Congress so that people would...
in order to make the room feel hotter?
I'm not making that up, okay?
Well, I noticed one thing which I've been saying for years is that every time there's a ferocious storm in the Northeast in the winter in America, Al Gore is nowhere to be seen for several months.
If this were such a wonderful case, why would you have to actually doctor the atmosphere inside the hearing room? That's what I want to know.
But, Professor Michaels, we know that there's something wrong. We also know that they're rushing to judgment. We also know that Copenhagen would be a disaster if there's concurrence. Is there any chance that this disclosure, this climate gate, will stop this train from speeding us over the cliff?
Well, I certainly think it very well might. You know, Mr. Obama is going to Copenhagen, and now he says the U.S. is going to reduce its greenhouse emissions by 83% by 2050. You know what? The Senate hasn't agreed to that. We may have a climate czar, but we don't have a king for the president. He can't make that commitment. And so what's going to happen is everything is going to get kicked down the road to the next U.N. meeting, which is November 10th, 2008, 2010, November 8th. 6 days after our election. You don't think this is going to be an issue in the congressional election now?
Oh, I see what you mean. We hope it is. We hope that the average person will be given an opportunity to study some of this and see the fraud and intimidation that's been involved and draw their own conclusions as to the cost. I mean, but look, you and I both know that the medical reform stuff has cost the Democrats enormous political capital, and they're running scared right now. I don't think they can afford another scandal, do you?
No, but you know what's odd? When the president said he's going to go to Copenhagen and do this, he is forcing the Senate to vote on this bill. And
okay, so is that a good thing? Because then the discussion will arise? Is that it?
I wonder how many egos have been ruffled right now. People sitting on the fence saying, oh, my God, after health care, I don't want to vote on this, and look what just happened.
Oh, so he's forcing them to vote next year.
Yes, because he goes to Copenhagen, and he says the United States will reduce its emissions 83%. That's equivalent to what's in the Waxman-Markey bill. I can't see how this cannot happen.
Professor Michaels, when science fraud occurs, and it does occur, what are the ramifications? Shouldn't people be held accountable?
Well, I am very scared about this one, because when you try and alter what goes into the refereed literature, you know, the refereed literature is the Bible of science. You know that. That's like trying to say, well, Mark, you can't write that in the Bible because that's not politically correct.
No. Right.
So then these documents that summarize the literature, things like reports from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, are then used by the EPA as the basis for regulation. Now we know that this literature has been tilted.
You and I both know it. You have a PhD in climate science, or close to it. I have a PhD not in climate science, but well enough in epidemiology where I can read literature. I want to say something else. I've collected plants in the tropics for a long time. I haven't done so in 10 years. But, you know, you can learn certain things about climate and climate change by collecting plants, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, botanists can also contribute to this study. And believe me, the little I know about this from a scientific point of view, and as a man who is a boater, and you say, well, what does boating have to do with this? It has a lot to do with it. I have tide tables going back a very long period of time. I haven't seen 1 centimeter rise in any of the tides in San Francisco Bay over 20 years. Wouldn't you expect there'd be some rise if we had melting glaciers?
Yeah, I'd like to take a look at that data. Let me tell you something else as a botanist that you'd like to know. Did you know for several thousand years after the end of the last ice age, the North Woods, the boreal forest, extended all the way to the Arctic Ocean in Eurasia. Now it's treeless tundra because it's colder. In other words, it was warmer for thousands of years in the summer. Did the polar bear die? No. Did the Inuit culture go away? No. It radiated. Excuse me. We've been through this before and more. And
so in other words, even if there's a slight warming, so what is what you're saying?
Live. And this is what's not being allowed in the literature. It's not, by the way, you know, it's not that you can say, you know, there's no such thing as global warming, and you get kicked out of the literature. Now, if you say, yes, the planet's warmer than it was, and human beings might have something to do with it, but it's not that big a deal, and here's why, and here are the statistics, that's what they're trying to keep out of the literature. Because they complained in these emails bitterly about a paper that I had gotten published that showed it was warming and said people had something to do with it. It just said it wasn't the end of the world.
Yes. So the anthropogenic element, meaning man-induced, blah, 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 is the big deal, number one. And number two, so what if it's warming slightly? It's actually good for mankind because there'll be more plant life and more food. Isn't that true?
If you take a look at satellite imagery of the planet, you can see that the planet is greener than it was. It is getting greener, not browner.
So that's good.
You would think so.
And you know what really has always struck me as humorous, and you know, I've used a simple analogy. How many ice ages have there been through geological history? Is it seven that we know of?
A lot.
But every ice age that has occurred has then receded, and that is prior to the advent of the internal combustion engine or even coal-fired plants. So how could the ice have receded prior to the advent of these, whether it's industrialization or the internal combustion engine? What would have caused the ice to recede if it was not mankind? Wouldn't it have been some natural phenomena?
That is correct. And, you know, it's pretty easy in your mind to get the Earth into an ice age by making it whiter and have it reflect away more radiation with all the snow and ice. But it's real hard to get the Earth out of one in your mind. And the fact that there are such internal dynamics in the climate system means there's a lot of powerful natural variability.
Well, the bottom line for the average listener is that there's an awful lot to be discussed about global warming that is not being discussed. In fact, it's being repressed. That's why it's being called climate fraud or climate gate. And one of the leading climate skeptics, a real scientist and a real climatologist, is Patrick J. Michaels. His book is Climate of Extremes, which I hope you'll go and buy, folks. And also, where can we see your editorial, or the op-ed, the Doorgate Global Warming? Where was that published, Professor?
Review online. It's also on the Cato homepage, www.cato.org.
Well, I wish you good luck, and I do suggest that you get some climate bodyguards to go to the next conference with.
That part.
Thanks, and good luck. Thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation. That was great. That was really what makes radio wonderful. It's 49 minutes after the hour. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Migraine from this. Turn it off. It must be the chestnuts combined with the climate gate. I don't know what it is, but I think we should break that from now on. I can't deal with it. That's
you in your Chevrolet. America is asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land of all.
And that's when America was a country. That's all. Every car, you know, turn it off. I look at movies a lot. I admit it. You look at a movie from the 70s, even the 80s, every car, with rare exception, is an American car. And you say, what happened to this country in the last 20 years? Who did it to us? I saw it happening when I lived in Hawaii, what was going on, that the Japanese tour companies would, you know, flood Hawaii with tourists. That was okay. But they would be sending buses in by ship, Japanese buses. They wouldn't even use American tour buses to take around the Japanese tourists. So I said, if the politicians are this corrupt that they would permit this and not protect their own industries, I said, in 20 years, we're going to be out of business. Here we are. I'm always right. Now, there are things I'm wrong about, but it has nothing to do with the show. Personally, I make mistakes. In the family, I make mistakes. But when it comes to this business, I never make a mistake. I would say rarely. Very rarely do I make a mistake. This is my profession. I'm a surgeon. It's like having the finest neurosurgeon in the world when you're going in for brain surgery. That's who I am. You know, one slip of the scalpel and you're dead. It's the same in talk radio. Let me tell you that, my friends. One slip of the scalpel and you're really out of business. And the fact is I've had a few slips, but they weren't my fault. And the fact is that here I am because I'm the best neurosurgeon you're ever going to find. Now, when it comes down to what we're talking about, things such as climate gate, climate science, you can't beat me. Now, who are you going to believe? Somebody like me with a real PhD or a hack who goes on a television show from Hollywood and starts screaming about global warming and the science is in and don't bring up any data that doesn't fit because we'll throw it out? What is wrong with you people? Are you that naive and stupid? Because Obama tells you there's global warming, you believe it, you schmuck? New York, Betsy, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Michael. I've been wanting to call you for a long time. Several months ago, a few of my friends and I got together and we were praying for you. It was on a Wednesday, and then I was listening to your show on a Friday, and you said, I don't know what's happening, but I just feel like God is really trying to get through to me. And that you said that God is telling you that the most important thing is to know him. And I just want to let you know that...
You broke up. I'm sorry, you saw. God must have broke. Maybe he wants to keep it between you and I. I don't know. But keep praying for me. I believe in prayer. In fact, if everyone here who's listening is a devout, you know, religious person, hey, prayers are wonderful and they don't cost anything.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation. If you just joined us, you missed an awful lot, I got to tell you. I'm not trying to say anything about why you should listen to every hour or you don't get it or whatever, but really we talk about all topics, but we had one of the greatest climate skeptic scientists in the world on the show. I don't think he's been on any media. And if you listen to him, you know that it's all a fraud. And we talked about Tiger Woods, of course, and there's loads of Tiger Woods jokes, and like, is Tiger out of the woods or... You know, whatever. You heard it all before. The Tiger's Woody driver. You've heard it all before. And now there's another story just came out. Fourth generation southern white rhino born in Ohio. And the minute I got the story, I said to my producer, I said, what? What do you mean, fourth generation southern white rhino born in Ohio? I said, what, is another Republican was born in Ohio and they're reporting on that? I went on to read, no. It's not that. It's about it. It's a southern white or African rhino that was almost extinct at the turn of the century. And the population has now grown to more than 11,000 in the wild. And these white rhinos can weigh 6,000 pounds. And I read live up to 50 years in captivity. Isn't that nice? So I guess with Obamacare, which will cover illegal aliens and animals, the rhino might live to 60. Who knows? You don't know what your money might go for. And so you ought to be thankful for that. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. Huckstaby, Climategate, Woody, whatever you want to talk about. I still don't understand how they can get away with that lie that she broke open the tailgate to pull a guy out of a car. What kind of wreck was this that the airbags didn't, you know, deploy, right? That's number one. He couldn't in a big wreck. The airbags didn't deploy. That's number one. And number two, maybe in Sweden you break in the back window and pull your husband out over broken glass to help him after an accident, but I never heard about that in America. Is anyone from Sweden on the show? Can you help me with this? Is that what you do with your husband if he's in an SUV and there's a wreck? You bash the rear window in with a golf club and you pull him over broken glass? in order to help him? I don't know. Is that something they do in Gothenburg? Where do they do this? And other topics. Whatever topic is on your mind will be fair game because it's post. Hey, here's a Thanksgiving question. A post-Thanksgiving question. on, you know, when you're cooking your turkey in the house on Thursday, the house smells great as the air suffuses with the smell of home cooking. By Sunday, you want to puke. It smells like a slum. How the heck do you get the smell of turkey out of the drapes and carpets? I don't know what to do. I have opened the windows. I have run. What is it, a new kind of turkey they're making? What is this? I can't get it out of the wall. It's in the walls. And I was told by Mrs. S. that I do this every time I cook a turkey. She says, every year you say the same thing. I'll never do it again. It's why I go to restaurants. But I don't know how to get it out of the walls. I don't know what to do. It's gotten so bad. I've asked the housekeeper to get some incense, and I hate incense. I get sick from incense. I despise it. It gives me a sore throat. It's carcinogenic incense. Horrible. The only reason they run it in ashrams is because they don't have any running water, and they don't have any like spray to clean the air. There's no air conditioning. Of course they need incense in an ashram. It stinks in there. From the dirty robes. You clean your robe. Let me ask you something. If you have a choice to clean your dirty robe, which would you choose? The washing machine. So if you're stuck with dipping your robe in the Ganges, how clean can you get it? So they need incense to cover up the stench. I don't want incense. I mean, is there some other method? Like, women know these things. Like, you put lemon in the microwave and it cleans the microwave. Or you put ice cubes down in the disposal and it cleans the disposal as long as your hand doesn't go in with the ice cube. But how do you get turkey, the smell of turkey, out of a curtain? I don't know what to do in here. I feel like moving out of the house and having it, like, gutted. It's almost like black mold. Maybe this is a new thing. If I put this out there, maybe some shyster lawyer will sue the turkey growers now for ruining a house. Or if you want to talk about the global warming fraud, go ahead. Be my guest. Everything's a fraud today. Virtually nothing is honest. Tiger Woods image, fraud. The best golfer, yes, because you can't trick that. Okay, we give him that. But let's stop hearing he's the best human being ever. Like Obama. The best team ever in history to create an image, yes, they get that for tricking America into putting a huckster into the White House. Yes, they do. You have to give them credit for tricking the American moron, particularly the white people of America who didn't know what was coming. And particularly the idiots who didn't know that a man was a Marxist. And a fanatic at that, a fanatical Marxist. Now, I realize that many of you have been told that you can't say that, just as you've been told you can't say that it's climate fraud, not global warming. But let me tell you something. Truth is truth and lies are lies. You care to comment? Go ahead, comment. You can comment all you want. Now, here's a guy, think about Woods. His wife is gorgeous, right? Here's a guy who has the finest Swedish meatballs, and he runs for a German dumpling. What's that all about? No wonder she went nuts with the golf club. Looks like she gave him a good smack in the kisser before he was afraid of her. I mean, she hit him with the club? The bloody mouth? Where'd that come from? Can a broad hit you like that and get a bloody mouth from that? I want to know. Can you get smacked like that? Can you get a bloody? Are you sure you can? What if there was a ring on it, a five carat job? That could have knocked his lip open. But I don't understand the whole picture. Car wreck. What do you mean by car wreck? How do you explain that to me? There's no airbag. He went 30 feet from the driveway at 3 in the morning. What was that all about? It sounds like a typical American family after Thanksgiving dinner. They had a big fight. She had been brewing about this for a while because it's been in the tabloids. And after the guests went home, or they were in the guest house, they got into a heated, and she gave him a bang. He ran out of the house because he was afraid of hell of her. And she chased him with a golf club. That's all. I mean, that's all there is to it. What are they making up a story? Just say it. I'm not I'm a good golfer, but other than that, I'm like every other guy on earth. You know what I mean? And that's it. My mother, my mother, God rest her soul, knew a lot of things, not everything. Basic things she knew. So when we heard that Clinton, had Monica Lewinsky, she shrugged. She said, they all do it if they can. I don't know what she meant by they all, whether she meant all presidents, because it did go back to JFK. Even Eisenhower. Can you believe Eisenhower had a sex thing? I don't understand that. You know, when you say Eisenhower, the guy was like so straight. I could never even imagine him doing it with Mamie to even produce children, but he did. I mean, because there are children. It was like your teacher. When we get bored in school, when I was a kid, you'd look at your teacher and you're bored out of your mind. You're clawing the desk. You're carving your name with your nails into the Board of Education. You don't know what to do. It's so boring. And you look at the teacher and you say, you think so? You think to yourself, you say, well, she has two children. Say, all right, maybe twice. But you can't imagine them engaging in it for pleasure. You can imagine a teacher engaging in such a thing for reproductive purposes because the church permitted it. But it's the same here in this case. I mean, what are you talking about? It's unbelievable to me. What do you mean they all do it? Who does she mean? Presidents? All men? Any guy who has the guts does it and cheats on his wife? I don't know what she meant. All I know is my mother said they all do it. So in other words, when Clinton got caught with Lewinsky, she wasn't so affected by it. Because she was a diehard Democrat all life. She didn't know any better. She came from poverty. She thought all Democrats were good. Same today. Immigrants, impoverished cases, and communists all believe the Democrats are on their side. Nothing has changed, really. But now what? I mean, what's his name? Tiger Woods. I never paid attention to him. First of all, I'm not a golf. To me, I'm not a golf. I don't play the game. I don't like it. I was once a caddy in my life. I couldn't stand the grass. I sneezed. I decided never to do it again. Boring, too slow. I understand the skill, don't get me wrong. Now it sounds like a guy who's jealous because he can't hit the ball like that. That is true, but I still don't like the sport. Boring. How people can participate in a game like this and watch it, I do not know. They sit on the weekend like a schmo. Ooh, you got a birdie, whatever. I don't understand it. That's another game altogether. That's tennis, another sport that none wasps really were never good at until a certain point in history. But I don't know anything about tennis. I have friends who did. They wanted to, like, move into the white world very fast. I mean, I passed for white, but I never really was, like, into the games. Like polo. Look at the images of polo and polo gear. The guy's name is Lifshitz, who created it. Am I wrong about that? Is that right or wrong? It is, I think. Ralph Lauren, sorry. Yeah, does Ralph Lauren make polo? Ralph Lauren's real name is Lifshitz. Now, there's nothing wrong with being named Lifshitz at birth, but you definitely don't want to be known as Mr. Lifshitz when you're producing clothing, so you change it to Lauren. And he did very well. But look at all the imagery that he uses in his clothing lines. It's always the imagined aristocratic American look with snotty children, and they live in kind of Virginia with the horses, and the woman is, you know, like Miss Wasp, and the husband is, his name is Jock, and he went to Choate or whatever, and he never choked on a piece of chocolate, whatever. Okay, and it's always that fraudulent image, like the perfect people, but they're all in rehab. In real life, people like that are usually sexual deviants, and they're in rehab by the time they're 13. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Savage Nation, just to move it around a little bit. What's this one, Glenn Miller? What is this? Bugle Call Rag. That's when America was at war. Now, of course, we are at war, but they tell you we're not at war. I don't know what we're at, but they need 30,000 more troops to not go to war. What do they need them for? Hey, stop. I have a question for you. You know I'm opposed to this war in Afghanistan. I've been pretty clear on it. In fact, the longer I look at this, the less interested I am in seeing another man come back maimed or, God forbid, dead even. And, you know, someone asked me the other day, what do you think about the war in Afghanistan? I said, would you send your son there? He looked at me and he said, no. I said, that's your answer. I said, why doesn't Rush Limbaugh put on a uniform with Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck and let them go over there and lead some combat brigades? I am so sick and tired of these media people pushing war, knowing that they're never going to be called up. I'm sick of it. War is possibly the worst experience a man can ever go through. War is probably the worst thing that can happen to the ordinary man. I'm not talking about the career military person. I am talking about the ordinary man who likes an ordinary life and the ordinary things that an ordinary man likes. I look at people in the street and I say, how could this kid, this 18-year-old, 19-year-old kid holding his girlfriend, how could he learn to take a bayonet and stick it in another man's stomach and turn it and shoot him? The answer is, Patton said, don't worry, boys, you'll know what to do when you see your friend's guts hanging out. So the ordinary guy can turn into a killer if he has to. It's in all of us. That doesn't mean we should encourage it. I understand that. I think the right thing to be is anti-war, by the way. Not in principle. Not in theory. And, of course, every man knows that he should fight if it comes down to survival or protecting his home. He understands that. And also protecting his country. But are we protecting our country in Afghanistan? The answer in my mind is no. I have no idea what the strategic reasons are for us being there. I don't understand it. I still don't understand it. Now, if you disagree with me, I'm open to that. I am not a climate scientist where I say to you, no, I don't want to hear your side of the story. I don't know why we're in Afghanistan. And again, if you're a parent, ask yourself, and many of you have asked yourself and said, yes, my son is in the Marines, and I'm glad he's going to fight in Afghanistan. I respect that. Then please explain to my audience what they're fighting for. And please explain to me why they should be court-martialed for doing their jobs. How many Marines have been court-martialed even during Bush's years who were simply doing the jobs they were sent to do? Too many. We read a few weeks ago that several Navy SEALs have been court-martialed for slapping around a terrorist after a gun battle. Is that the kind of military you want to serve in or you want your kids to serve in? These people who run the military are letting this happen? They're worthless. They're worthless. And until we get real combat-hardened veterans in the highest positions in the military, we're going to have more of the same. That's why I'm talking about it. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. It's one man's opinion. Don't take it too seriously. It's only the truth. And I realize that the truth is of no value to most of you. You want to hear what you want to hear, many of you. Some of you really want to hear what I really think. If I could throw a joke in now and again, fine. And so that's it. It's Christmas already around the corner. What month is the end of November already? November 30th? 30 days hath November. Right? I used to remember those things in grade school. It is at 30 days. It's a 30-day month. Tomorrow's already the big one of December already. Jingle bells, Rudolph, the presents nobody wants, I hope, or whatever. Can't wait till that's over. No, I love December myself. I love all the holidays, the spirit. But they've killed it. They've killed it. I like the crèche. They took that away. I like a religious, somber thing surrounded. It reminds me that there's the sacred in the world. Instead, all we see is the profane. Why is it that the vermin in Hollywood who produce the refuse that runs through the sewer pipes of our televisions, how come they only permit the profane to go out through the televisions and in the movies? Why, largely the profane. Why never the truly sacred? Why do they mock the sacred and glorify or worship this, the profane? Very well put, Michael. Thank you. You get a gold star for that one. Why is it that they worship the profane and mock the sacred? Answer, because they're diluted marijuana cases. They're on hard drugs, most of them. And their minds as youth were ruined by marijuana. They became psychotic from the marijuana. It doesn't take away from their creativity. Many of the most creative people are insane. And many of the most creative people in Hollywood are absolutely crazy. They have everything upside down. They produce movies that glorify the gangster and condemn the cop. They produce more movies that are morally beyond belief. And then they're held up as role models for society. Marty Scorsese, like he's some god. Every movie he did glorified violence. Why should I look up to the guy? Because he's a talented guy? Well, there are a lot of talented people who are very, very devious and have produced nothing but evil. I don't look up to Martin Scorsese like he's some genius. Or Oliver Stone. And that's why I put an article up on him. I got angry over the weekend. For a change, I got angry over the weekend. I worked the whole weekend on my website. I look for the stories. Because the world doesn't stop because it's Thanksgiving. So one article got me angry. They showed Scorsese and Oliver Stone having dinner at some dive in New York. I never heard of it. Eating turkey and with their relatives. So I got angry. I put up a headline with their pictures. I said, two people who've poisoned America's minds eat from the same turkey. And I thought that was a good headline because I believe every word of it. All of a sudden, the guy who glorifies gangsters and another one who glorified everything anti-American are suddenly some people I should look up to for Thanksgiving? No, I'm sorry. Not really. Not really. I'd rather look at the guy at the Salvation Army who's taking care of the poor than Martin Scorsese and Oliver Stone.
Savage.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring. Snowing and blowing up bushels of fun.
A tragedy in Lakewood, Washington yesterday when four police officers were murdered in an execution-style ambush by a gunman that was being sought as we prepared today's report. Authorities are looking for a man with a long history of criminal and psychotic behavior in both Washington State and in Arkansas. I was governor during some of the time of his incarceration here.
Well, that's Huckstaby trying to cover up the fact that he granted clemency to Maurice Clemens, the alleged gunman. And the fact is that Huckstaby should take responsibility for this. He did this for political reasons. There's no question about it. I have read the brief in support of the executive clemency application for this murderer when Huckstaby was governor. And the fact of the matter is there's much more to the story than meets the eye. Huckstaby granted clemency to many murderers. In fact, far too many murderers. And Huckstaby has a record of doing so. Even former Governor Elliot Spitzer talked about the police shootings in Washington State. Listen to clip 14.
During my tenure, we had the counsel to the governor vet, and there were every year many, many requests for clemency and commutation, every one of these permutations. Hundreds of them would come in. We would vet them down to one or two that stood for a particular principle where there was an issue perhaps of actual innocence or where somebody, there was a gross imbalance between the penalty and the crime that had been committed. Now, I'm not going to jump in and take cheap shots here. Obviously, Governor Huckabee is going to be, this is a nightmare for him, and most of all, of course, for the victims in this case. This is everybody's worst disaster.
You listen to clip 15.
I would get a very specific memo saying, here are the 10 cases that have made it through. Which of these do you believe is an appropriate choice for clemency? And I think I only chose one or two, and they're very, very limited because, frankly, the judicial system is supposed to work where judges and juries impose sentences and there's a rationale for it. Unless there's an issue of actual innocence or a gross imbalance in the way a sentence has been imposed, usually it should not be handed out.
Understood.
I would blame the ACLU for the release of this cop killer, and I'll tell you why. They've had a thing called a sentencing project for years where they have claimed that black men are unfairly targeted by the police and the judicial system, that black men are unfairly tried, there are too many black men in prison, they're all innocent, they're only put there because it's a racist system. I've heard all the garbage. It is the ACLU who forced Governor Huckabee's hand, in my opinion. Of course, Huckstaby is ultimately responsible, but make no mistake about it. It's the liberals in the ACLU and like organizations, the National Lawyers Guild and such, who forced many, many governors and many, many judges to release dangerous criminals. And we know the results are usually tragic for innocent people. That's all there is to it. In plain English, again, it proves that liberalism is dangerous for children, women, and other living things, including police now. Now, let's go down to the actual killing. You say to yourself, how could four armed policemen, there's three policemen and a woman, it's four, correct, Beowulf? Four. Three men and a woman. They're all armed. They're sitting in a coffee shop working on their laptops on reports. The reason they're doing reports is because that's all they are told to do day and night is write reports for the civilian review boards, that every time they arrest someone, they have to justify it 30,000 different ways to Sunday. They're typing up the reports, and the man kills them. You say, well, how could this happen? You could see, God forbid, it happening to one, but by then the other three would draw and kill him. You don't understand something. You have no idea the danger that an officer of the law is in virtually every minute of his life. You don't understand the stress they're under because you read the movie, you go to movies produced by the potheads who make it, schmucks like Oliver Stone who hate police, hate the military, hate America, and they make every cop look corrupt. They make every criminal look innocent, so you're brainwashed. But you don't really understand the danger they're in just by walking around in their blue uniform. You don't understand that they can be killed at any moment. You say, ah, come on, you're just trying to kiss them. No, you got to listen to what I'm saying to you. How does this a thing like this happen? Okay, let's run it back. They're sitting in a coffee shop. This guy who allegedly did it, Maurice, whatever his name is, could have just been another diner there having a cup of coffee. Meanwhile, he had in his mind he's going to kill him. He doesn't come running and saying, I'm going to kill you. Because he wouldn't have gotten away with it. So he sits there and he waits and he watches. He's a psycho and he's a cold-blooded murderer who never should have been let out of jail. He waits for a moment when all of their heads are away from him and he walks up and he shoots them like ducks in a row. That's how it was done. It's as simple as that. It's the same with the Islamo-terrorist cells in the United States of America. They're very much like this murderer. They're psychotic. They're hiding. They're waiting. And every time and any time they see an opening and a weakness, they will take the shot at this country. Why? because liberals have made it safe for them to do so. They understand that if the police had looked at this guy sitting at the counter, didn't like the way he looked. Let's say one of the cops looked at him, and his instincts in law enforcement and as a human being said, there's something about this guy I don't like. There's something about him, his eyes, he's jittery. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, the cop would have gone up to him and talked to him, and he would have frisked him and seen if he had a gun. Then they would have done a search and seen he was on a record or whatever. Never would have happened. But because of the vermin in the legal profession, because of the rats in the media, because of the garbage in the government, every instinct in the FBI, every instinct in the CIA, every instinct in the police has been overridden by political cowardice. As a result, soldiers are dying, police are dying, and thanks to your liberal friends that that is happening. New York City, WOR, Tom, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Michael Savage, God bless you and your family. Michael, we continue to live in what you call the upside-down states of America. We prosecute our best and finest Navy SEALs for punching a terrorist in the mouth while we give clemency to criminals. And we now have 9 children who have lost their parent and police officers to an execution in a coffee shop.
And they can't find them either. Where is he right now, shot in the stomach? Where is he? Where is he hiding? What's he, in some liberal's house? Some good liberal who says he's taking him in because he's on the run?
Why wasn't one of the police officers on guard in a ready position, Michael? We have to change our rules of engagement.
Well, hold on. I had this discussion last night with an officer of the law who told me that it's not as this happens much more often than you may think. You know, they're human beings. They went into the coffee shop for a coffee. Who would have expected an executioner to be sitting there having a cup of coffee? Would you have ever expected that?
Never, but one should be in ready position at all times, Michael.
So in other words, the 3 of them should have been having coffee and one of them should have been standing and watching their back.
Yeah, perhaps something close to that, or at least be in a position of closeness to readiness in case of anything.
Well, again, I blame the ACLU. I blame the liberal establishment and liberal brainwashing. The same people who are trying to BS us about global warming, which doesn't exist. The same rats who are trying to destroy the greatest healthcare system in the world, telling us that it's not good enough to illegal aliens and every other slime bag on the planet, that they also need care and I should pay for it. The very same people who are running down the medical system have run the police off the road. So every one of their instincts were not operational. Even if they looked at this guy and said something's wrong with him, they couldn't have gone up to him. They would have lost their job.
How could a governor give clemency to 1,033 criminals, Michael? It's unbelievable.
Well, let me ask you something. Did you ever have faith in Huckabee as a potential Republican candidate for the presidency?
They said he was very weak on crime, and this really...
No. I don't know if you heard me. Did you ever have the feeling that this guy could be a viable candidate prior to this?
No, he was not one of my strong candidates, Michael.
So when you saw Huckabee with his own show on Fox, were you impressed that he was a genius and a great Republican candidate? I wasn't.
He seemed very, almost very weak conservative, Michael. I mean, maybe, you know, pretend might be too strong of a word, but I wouldn't say strong.
Well, he's finished now, thank God. Let him go, do a tent. He can do a tent rally somewhere and get the people to come in. You know, along the lines of Elmer Gantry. That's all he's good for. They should throw him off Fox News now, too. How many criminals did he release in his lifetime? Over 1,000? Why would he have done that?
1,000. They said like one every 40 days it might have been.
But why? Why would Huckabee have done that? Because he was trying to curry favor with the liberal establishment. No other answer. So it's come out in the wash that he's a fraud. Another fraud along the line of many, many others, going back to Bob Dole, even possibly before him. Sad day in America. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255, Spokane, Washington. Ken, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Remembrance for these officers here in Washington State. Could you play the bagpipe piece that you've played in the past?
Sure I can. I may not be at this second. I may do it at the end of this hour. But in Washington State, are people shocked by this, or are the liberals celebrating and opening bottles of champagne and high-fiving each other?
Well, that's what we get for letting these people run our country.
That's right. Liberalism is a dangerous mental disorder. And just as this guy was able to execute 4 cops, I am telling you as I sit here, the reason that the guy who was able to kill at Fort Hood, the same exact thing. People knew he was nuts. People knew he was dangerous. People knew he was an Islamist. People wanted to call him on it, but they were unable to do it because liberalism, the insanity, has stopped people from doing what they need to do to defend themselves. And that's why these cops are dead. The same exact thing. Play the bagpipes, please.
Officers, attend. Present arms.
This is the Savage Nation. This is a small memorial to the four slain police officers killed because of liberalism outside of Seattle. Today is that the health overhaul is going to cover illegal aliens, despite what Obama told you, despite what Biden told you, despite what any other Democrat said. They are, and despite Obama pledged. Remember during his speech, this will not cover illegal aliens? Obama lied. That's right. The great man lied. If you can believe it, he told you a lie right to your face. The health bill covers illegal aliens. You're going to pay for their medical care. That's number one. There is no question that climate change is a lie. There's no question that man has nothing to do with it. Does that mean I'm in favor of pollution? No, I've worked all my life against pollution and polluting machinery, and I've helped rescue rainforests from destruction. So I have all of the bona fides, but the fact of the matter is climate change is a fraud, particularly man-induced climate change. The reason they're pushing it is because they want to gain control and they want to make trillions of dollars on our back by scaring you into this. The scientific establishment has been caught with their pants down, so to speak. We did a great interview today that shows you beyond a reasonable doubt that it's all a fraud. And yet the White House is going ahead with this big lie. How could they get away with it, you say? Who is going to stop them? You? You're going to stop them? Who is going to stop them? Only you can stop them in 2010 by throwing every Democrat out. You should fire every Democrat. Everyone should be thrown out. I don't care. As much as I'm not a fan of the Republicans, particularly the rhinos, there's no question in my mind that anybody who goes along with global warming should be fired, Republican or Democrat. The White House just made it clear that it wants nothing to do with the Fuhrer over documents which says that global warming is not a threat. Did you hear this? Now, these headlines have made the blogosphere alive. They've rocked the international blogosphere last week. And yet the liar, Robert Gibbs, the spokesmouth for Obama, said that the climate science is sound. He said climate change is happening. Now, this is nothing but a flack. This guy looks like a pallbearer at an Irish funeral, frankly. And he's no better than a pallbearer at a fake funeral. But I don't want the funeral to be for America. And let me tell you something. If they go ahead with this Copenhagen Treaty, which our fraudster in chief is going to attend, you may as well bury America because it's going to be dead. It's a lie. And for Gibbs to get up there and say that there's nothing in dispute anymore? What does this dummy know about climate change? What does this schmuck, this spokesmouth for Obama, know anything about science? How could he get up there and say, I don't think that's anything that is, quite frankly, among most people in dispute anymore? You're going to believe this liar, this donkey? You're going to believe this donkey? How could you believe him? There's been an international furor over the truth or falsehood of the works of these scientists. They've rigged the data. They've buried the data. They've thrown anyone out off scientific journals that didn't agree with them. And yet Obama says, I'm going ahead with it because I can. And it's another good way for me to rape you. That's all. New York, WOR Sherman, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I live in Manhattan, and I live next door to a restaurant, kind of a comfort food-style restaurant, and police officers are eating in there all the time. And let me be frank with you. I walk by there because I live next door to it, and they're never in a ready position either. And I live in New York City, and if anybody should be in a ready position, it should be the police officers here. And they're in there, and they're laughing, and they're relaxing. And, you know, it's psychological. When a human being is eating food, I think that's the time when they feel the most relaxed, you know.
Yep.
And
this guy, this psycho, knew when to hit. But the fact of the matter is, even if he had indicated, let's say, through bug eyes or jerky motions or whatever, and a cop had sensed something wrong, he could not go up to him without cause because of the liberal vermin and say to him, hey, let me ask you something. What's your name? Show me your ID. He couldn't have done that. You know that.
Absolutely. I agree with you, sir. You're right. So it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. But I honestly will say this. I'd rather have them be damned if they do. I think we are all suffering as a result of letting police officers be in a position where their hands are tied. I think it's
But that's why the military is losing in Afghanistan. It's why we're losing the war on terror. It is why. It's all got to do with liberal laws and liberal thinking. It is killing us. It's killing us locally and globally. There's no question about it. And the liberal in chief, if you want to call him that, the LIC is no better. Thank you for the call. Well, what do you want a cop to do? Not sit down and have a sandwich? He's got to have a guy standing there with a stun gun, a Sten gun, a machine gun? What do you want him to do every time he has a cup of coffee now? Well, they're going to be different now. They're going to be different now, I can guarantee you. At least I hope so, because I can tell you terrorists learned from this. What would the Islamo-fascists have learned from this incident outside Seattle? They've learned they can go up and shoot cops and get away with it. What did they learn from Fort Hood? They learned that the minute one of their Islamo-fascist cohorts kills, the liberal media, including Chris Matthews, will defend that killer. Geraldo Rivera will say he had a bad tooth. Do you understand what they've learned? They've learned they can count on their friends in the government media complex to justify Islamo-fascist jihad. That's what they learned. You understand? 1-800-449-8255, you know that. You don't know the website, though, because I only have 1.4 million out of 10 million people a week going on to the website. I got to boost it. If I have 10 million listeners a week on the radio show, which is allegedly what I have, according to the data I've seen, how come only 1.4 million of you go to my website every week? What's the matter? You're not loyal to me? Every one of you listening should go there to see what I get and why I work and why my eyes are dying. Okay, Chicago, Mike, you're up on the Savage Nation on WIND. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I wanted to talk about Mike Huckabee.
Go ahead, quickly.
Yeah, he, as governor of Arkansas from 1996 to 2004, he's let out, he used the power of clemency over 700.
Over 1,000 felons were released. That's correct.
Clemency, though, 700.
Right. Why don't you call Fox News and ask him why they still have him on?
Listen to this.
How long have I called him Hucksterby? Have you listened to my show at all for a while?
He's a schmuck. He should be investigated.
All right, thank you. We already said it 5 minutes ago. He waited, and that's all. So there it is. There it is. Sacramento, Michael, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, your interview with Dr. Mike Slate is one of the reasons that you're so distinguished from just about everybody else.
I loved it. I mean, I really did feel that was radio worth listening to. I'm going to play it again this week. It was so good. Absolutely. So what's on your mind?
You had Harm de Blundjan some years ago, and I bought his book, and that book led to other books. And my point is this. We have
quickly.
The information now. I'm sorry.
We're just out of time. I'm very sorry. You're asking where are the leaders on climate? The answer is there are no leaders. They're liars. What you call leaders, I call liars. The leaders are on talk radio and on the blogosphere.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Thank you. You know, when the show ended before Thanksgiving, I said, since Obama's cooking America, we'll cook a turkey. And I gave you a turkey recipe. I was in a restaurant the other night, and a man from Cleveland came up to me and said, hey, Michael, my nephew called me the other day. And he said, did you hear what Michael Savage said the other day? I said, what's that? I knew what he was going to say. He said, Savage said, since Obama's cooking America, we'll cook a turkey. Well, you see, the little stuff really matters, and the simple things are what you remember. What I failed to tell you is how to cook chestnuts, which I did with my dinner as well. It's a traditional American dish. People don't understand how simple it is to cook these chestnuts. But if you're not careful, you can make a mistake and they'll blow up in the oven. So I'll give you a little chestnut recipe one of these days. Also, over the weekend, I saw one of the best movies of recent times, very exciting, called The International, with my favorite actress, Naomi Watts, and a great actor, Clive Owen. In the movie, an Interpol agent is played by Owen, and a DA from New York is played by Naomi Watts. And they're trying to bring to justice one of the world's most powerful banks. That's right, you heard me. Banks that were involved, a bank involved in illegal activities, including money laundering, arms trading, and the destabilization of governments. Huh? Sound familiar? Well, the characters find themselves in a chase across the globe with their own lives at risk, as the bank will stop at nothing, even murder, to continue financing terror and war. Sound familiar?
Art imitates life.
One of the biggest stories over the weekend is the murder in cold blood of the cops in Washington State by a man paroled by Governor Huckabee when Huckabee was the governor of Arkansas. I have been saying for years he was a huckster. He was a liberal in wolf's clothing. I told you not to trust these people, and you didn't believe me. I warned you that he's not different than the rest of the Republicrats. I called him Huckabee for years. Well, he released this murderer in order to appease, I'm sorry to tell you this, the black voters of Arkansas, and look what happened. I have the papers today on Huckabee's release of this murderer who killed the five cops. We also have the story of Tiger Woods. It's all over the media. Now, I woke up this morning laughing to myself, and I did. I'm telling myself jokes in my sleep. I woke up laughing at 5 a.m. saying, did Tiger's Woody drive her? And the fact is, there's a fabulous story on michaelsavage.com which describes how Woods' image has been manufactured from the beginning by a major image-making corporation. They say it's true that he is the best golfer in the world, and don't try to take that away from him. But they also say that his image is that of the best human being in the world. We learned today, of course, that that's been manufactured, just as Obama's image has been manufactured by a machine that manufactures human images. So the same machine that tries to destroy my image, or the image of any conservative who stands in the way of the liberal agenda that is fascism, they manufacture the images that you believe to be true. And my headline is, did Tiger's Woody drive her? You got to go to michaelsavage.com, and you know, you got to go to michaelsavage.com, and frankly, it's very sad today. The suspected cop killer was released from jail just 1 week ago. The Kansas City Star is calling this Huckabee's Willie Horton moment, and they say his chance to be president is going up in smoke. Listen to me. It went up in smoke before this. He was nothing then, and he's less than nothing now. Huckabee has always been less than zero. You got to see the article on my website, Huckabee Pardoned Many Dangerous Felons. Take a look at the article. It's from the Seattle Times, a lib mag. By the way, you know the White House gate crashers? They're tied to a pro-Palestinian professor who has sympathy for terrorists. You heard me. This whole story stinks to high heaven. Troops in Afghanistan plead for reinforcements. They're told they're coming soon. That'll be like your cop calling for backup during a shootout and being told, wait a few months. It is okay now for people with HIV and AIDS to be barbers and cosmetologists, says Obama. Check out that story. House leader battles Britain's savage ban. Great story. Be sure to read it. There are seven stories Barack Obama doesn't want told. And we told you about image making. Read them on michaelsavage.com. Medicare fraudsters rake in billions. Oh, yes. You didn't read this in your local newspaper. But the Swiss have banned minarets. That's right. The elites are going crazy. They will go crazy because the people have said no to any more minarets in Switzerland. How do you like that?
If they aren't old, you're trash.
Also on MichaelSavage.com, I put it back up for the holidays, is this. It's Healing Children Naturally. Very important for the winter. It is on the subject of health and nutrition with an A to Z, natural approaches for natural complaints. Very important book. 10 failed doomsday predictions. We've heard about this before. Remember Y2K, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's like global warming. Polanski can throw parties under house arrest. Huh. What a house arrest. Can you invite me? Bodies pile up in New York City gang war. Tiger's good guy image manufactured from start. UN climate chief says emails that expose global warming to be a fraud is no problem. Same thing below it. The climate change data that they've been citing that predicted global warming have been thrown away. You believe any of it? I don't. On the bottom of MichaelSavage.com, there's an interesting article. Remote Brazilian twin village stirs rumors of Joseph Mengele. Well, that's it from MichaelSavage.com.
Savage.
The ClimateGate email story is spreading, and joining us now is Dr. Peter Bregan, who has drawn some important lessons about science from the hacked emails from the global warming advocates.
Someone hacked into the email files of Director Phil Jones and his colleagues at Britain's leading climate research unit. The emails show these men using intimidation and fraud to make their scientific reputations, carve out their fiefdoms, push their global agendas, and promote their progressive politics. They exclude and discredit skeptical scientists. They discuss purging contrary data. They describe how to falsify and manipulate the facts in order to explain away the lack of global warming since 2001. These hacked emails undermine the credibility of these leading climate change advocates. Whether or not the globe is being heated up by human activity, we cannot rely on these scientists to give us the facts. The hacked emails remind us not to trust the integrity of so-called scientists and researchers when they argue on behalf of powerful political ideologies and trillion-dollar industries. These scientists easily gain a headlock on the media and on public opinion, but too often they are propping up hugely powerful interest groups. As a scientist and a researcher, I've been confronting establishment psychiatry for decades. In psychiatry, some of the most colossal liars are leading professors who routinely are quoted as scientific experts. Strip away their public identity, and you'll find a drug company rep inside. Many of these scientists put their names on papers that are actually written by the PR departments of drug companies. It's called ghostwriting. Recently, several of America's most esteemed professors of psychiatry were found to be secretly and heavily on the take from drug companies. Only one of them has been fired, and he was quickly grabbed up and made chairman of yet another department of psychiatry. These scientific cheats are great rainmakers.
Well, how much of science, in your opinion, is corrupt these days?
In the field I know best, biological psychiatry, nearly all of it is political smoke and mirrors. Psychiatric science serves the drug companies and their surrogates in the professions and in institutions like NIH, NIMH, the AMA, and the American Psychiatric Association, as well as our major universities. I've described this power structure as the psychopharmaceutical complex. In Medication Madness and in other books, I show how this psychopharmaceutical complex makes a mockery of science. The experts simply cannot be trusted. Unless it serves their masters, their research isn't even published.
What about this peer review? I know that most of them mean nothing. I mean, it's just a club. I was in science. Of course, scientific articles are supposed to be reviewed, but peer review means nothing. It's a matter of what club you're in.
Peer-reviewed articles are supposed to be judged blind without the evaluators knowing who wrote them. But knowing the name of the author doesn't matter because it's the content that they want to censor. Many years ago, a blinded reviewer turned down one of my articles because I cited Peter Bregan. That's me, of course. Peer review becomes a closed system, an old buddy network that systematically excludes every scientist who pursues objectivity and honesty rather than service to the power structure.
What's the solution?
We need to become much more skeptical about scientific studies and pronouncements that serve powerful interest groups and political agendas. When the latest studies are published and quoted in the media, we must ask ourselves, whom does it serve? If it bolsters huge financial and political interests, treat the reports with utter skepticism. Even the underlying data can be falsified. Putting on a white coat, especially when its pockets are stuffed with money, doesn't make a reliable scientist. Galileo said it well. In questions of science, the authority of a thousand is not worth the humble reasoning of a single individual. Rely on your own common sense and look for dissenting views. This is psychiatrist Peter R. Breggin, M.D. My latest book is Wow, I'm an American, How to Live Like Our Heroic Founders. You can find me in the book and all of my Savage Nation reports at www.breggin.com. That's BREGGIN.com.
Thanks, Dr. Breggin. I'm a student of history, number one. The British got defeated in Afghanistan. We haven't learned from that experience. Do you remember the Russian military fought in Afghanistan? Do you remember how powerful the USSR was at the time? Do you have any recollection of the kind of weaponry they were able to bring onto that battlefield? Do you remember the images of those helicopters coming over a mountain pass? Maybe you saw them in movies. Now, you were an Afghani Taliban fighting against them. What would you feel? They were brave enough to stand up with, by the way, Stinger missiles given to them by the United States military. I should say the United States government gave the very men we're fighting now Stinger missiles to shoot down Russian helicopters. Well, today the Afghanis don't need American aid. They've got it from many, many other sources. Iran primarily, probably Russia. I'm not so sure. I don't know where they're getting their weapons. And so therefore I ask you, not only from the point of view strategically, can we win, but should we be there? Strategically, I don't know how we can win there. Where's the enemy? Who is the enemy? Who was the enemy in Afghanistan? First, let's define terms. We knew who the enemy was when the men were fighting against the Germans. Let's start with the obvious. It was the fascist Nazi party. They were identifiable. They were on a quest to rule the world and impose the Nazi ideology throughout the world. So when the men were fighting, although they were scared to death like every man who fights in war is, at least they knew what they were fighting for and who the enemy was. Can you say with any certainty that you know who the enemy is in Afghanistan and why we're fighting there? If you can, please help me understand it, because I don't. I don't know who the enemy is. Tell us what you think. Why are we in Afghanistan? Ann Arbor, Michigan. Joe, you are a vet. Joe, where were you a vet? When were you a vet?
Michael, I was in the Marines during the Vietnam conflict.
And so, therefore, you've been there, you've done that. What's your opinion? Should we get out or stay in?
I don't think we ever should have gone, and certainly we should get out immediately. You know, they've been skirting the entire issue, Michael. The problem is Saudi Arabia. Nobody wants to call a spade a spade. That's where all the Wahhabi...
What do you mean? We are Hessians for Saudi Arabia, in essence?
No, we're protecting our greatest enemy because our oil companies are in bed with them. We need to get an oil policy, we need to drill, and we need to reduce our dependency on their oil, and then we need to go after the Wahhabi sect of the Muslim crazy religion in Saudi Arabia, because that's where they're all coming from.
Boy, is that well put. It's a shame Obama's not listening to the show. He should tap you for the Department of Homeland Security.
Hey, Michael, just a side note. I want to thank you as a veteran. Your show is a godsend. It's a gift. I sometimes listen to you twice a night.
Well, Joe, look, I'm not a veteran, but my heart goes out to those who are, and I don't know how to do enough for them. You know, I've made contributions to those falsely accused over the years. I do everything I can to support the veterans of this country, because to me it's like the police on a domestic level. If it were not for the thin blue line, the animals in the street would take over the cities. And if it were not for the guys like you in uniform, we wouldn't even be talking today. You know that, and I know that, Joe.
Yep, and you're preaching to the choir, buddy.
All right, and calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan, boy, are you surrounded. You're in enemy territory.
Well, it's kind of like you. I sleep in a different bed every night.
People ask me how I live in San Francisco. You know what the answer is? Not much longer. So here we are, sitting here. It's just another Monday. It's, you know, whatever it is. Most Americans are tied up worrying about whatever, the taxes that Obama, you know, remember trickle up. Remember I created the phrase trickle up poverty? Sure enough, that's what he's doing. I gave it to Tom McCann, but Tom McCann didn't want it because Tom McCann is the Manchurian candidate. Or someone said the Vietnam candidate. I mean, come on. Could have won the election. One blow would have been the end of it. Then we would have had the sad sack John McCain in there. Can you imagine if he had won? What a thought that is. What if McCain actually decided not to take the fall, like Primo Carnera? You know, he says, no, I can't take the fall. I have honor and dignity. The McCain name means something. I'm not going to take the fall for the establishment. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to use that savage's idea, trickle up poverty, and I'm going to win. I can't take the fall. And he wins. Now, what if McCain was president? Would it be different today? Yeah, it'd be much different. That's why I had to endorse the shoe salesman at the end. Because at least we wouldn't have the fear of overt Leninism taking over America. It would have been a continuation of soft, you know, Bolshevik America going forward, you know, like a local as opposed to an express train to hell.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday?
It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation.
Got to work, like a sleeve on.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Despite the media's attempts to cover up the emails showing that global warming is a sham, some coverage is seeping out. One of the earliest reports on this story came from James Dellingpole, who writes for The Telegraph UK. He joins us now. James Dellingpole, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you very much for having me back on your show.
Well, you say the release of these emails may be the final nail in the coffin to this global warming sham, but the UN is digging their heels in. They are saying it doesn't matter. UN climate chief says emails, no problem.
Yeah, this, I think, is possibly the greatest scientific scandal of the modern age. They're calling it ClimateGate, and it is that important. What happened is that at a British educational establishment called the Climate Research Unit at the University of East Anglia, there was some kind of computerized break-in. Either a hacker or an insider leaked something like 61 megabytes of files and posted them on the internet. And what these files did was incriminate, it appears, several of the scientists most closely associated with Al Gore's great global warming myth. The warmest scientists, as you might call them, the people who are sort of touting this theory that the world is warming up, it's all man's fault and we're doomed, they've all been saying this is a non-story. It doesn't matter at all. It doesn't prove anything. I would say that actually it does. It proves what a lot of us have been saying all along, which is that the whole of the process by which certain scientists driving Al Gore's big myth about global warming is essentially corrupt.
Exactly.
A lot of the scientists who are exposed in these emails are also involved, heavily involved, with compiling the International Panel on Climate Change's reports. And these are the reports which all the government leaders read, and these are the reports which lead them to increase regulation, increase our taxes, poke their noses into every aspect of our lives in the name of climate change, this impending catastrophe, which is so important that it is worth depriving people of their freedom, that it is worth increasing taxes, that it is worth increasing regulations, that it is worth wiping trillions of dollars off the global economy because this global warming thing is so important. Well, there are those of us who think that this is the biggest con trick in history. In fact, it's worse than that. It is an attempt to install world government through the back door.
Some will say this sounds like a conspiracy theory.
You know, that may sound like a conspiracy theory, but the fact is that one of the main guys behind the whole climate change meme, you might call it, was a guy called Maurice Strong. He's still with us. He's a Canadian, and Maurice Strong was one of the main supporters of installing a world government, and he was the guy behind, do you remember the Rio climate conference? That was the first big climate conference where all the kind of eco-freaks went to and said, yes, we must save the world from man's evil. Carbon is a poison. It is polluting the world. It is driving temperature. So, it is a kind of conspiracy that's going on here. And these scientists whose emails have been exposed by the hacker are very much part of this conspiracy.
What kind of information was in those emails? Remind us what they say.
A range of information was exposed in these emails. Some of it kind of mildly unpleasant stuff, like there's an email where I suppose you'd call him a climate change denier, an Australian guy, dies quite young, and in one of the emails, one of these scientists gloats over the fact that he's died, saying, you know, in some ways this is good news. That's a sick thing, I think. Some of this stuff has to do with fiddling the facts to make the case of the global warming lobby look more dramatic. One of the big problems that these warmist scientists have is that 1,000 years ago, global temperatures were much warmer than they are now. There was this thing between about 900 AD and about 1300 AD called the medieval warming period, where grapevines grew much further north than they do now, where Greenland was actually green rather than covered in snow, where Vikings actually settled as farmers for 3 or 4 centuries, but then were driven out by the return of what's called the Little Ice Age. And the reason why this matters is that if we are to believe the more extreme claims of the climate fear promotion lobby, the world is warmer now than it has ever been in centuries. But in fact, this just isn't true. And what these scientists at the Climate Research Unit had been doing was trying to hide evidence of the medieval warming period. They'd been trying to trick the data, one of the scientists, in fact the director of the Climate Research Unit called it, trying to trick the data so that it more or less hid that inconvenient medieval warm period, so it looked like indeed that the late part of the 20th century was the hottest time in the last 1,000 years. And this just isn't true. Another thing these scientists were shown conspiring to do in some of these emails, they were trying to shut out of the debate any scientists who disagree with them. So there's this thing called peer review. You may have heard this phrase, peer review. Peer review is something you hear used a lot by warmist scientists because they argue that they are the ones with scientific credibility on their side. They've all been peer reviewed in the right magazines, Nature and so on, which means that other scientists have looked at their work and validated it. Now, what emerges from these emails is that these scientists have been conspiring to shut out any scientists who disagree with them. So, for example, when there was a magazine, they discovered there was a magazine which had been taken over by skeptical scientists, they decided that in future they would not submit any papers to this journal, and that they would try and effectively get the editors sacked. In other words, they didn't want there to be any debate on this issue at all. They wanted to shut down the argument, which I'm afraid is a technique used all the time. They don't like facts because the facts normally work against them.
Well, what kind of reaction has this story created?
The reaction to this story has been totally fascinating and completely symptomatic of the way the world is right now, which is to say that the mainstream media has barely reported this story one bit. The New York Times, for example, their environment correspondent decided that because these emails had been stolen, it would be unethical to publish them in a respectable newspaper. That was his excuse, never mind the fact that he was closely associated with many of these scientists and they fed him all his best man is doomed stories. He felt that this story was not really fit for publication in any detail. In Britain, the BBC, the left-wing BBC, has had much the same response. Most of our newspapers haven't published this story, and I think it's the same in America. Where the story has spread like wildfire is in the blogosphere. On the internet and also on talk radio shows, I'm happy to say, like this one. And it's really good, the work you're doing, putting this story out, because it needs to be told. This is a scandal of extraordinary proportions. And the reason it's so scandalous is because it's going to touch all our lives. You know, you sometimes hear people saying, well, what's so wrong about doing our bit for global warming? You know, isn't it important that we try and look after the planet? Hey, nobody is saying we should go around polluting the planet. Nobody is saying we should go and torch our beautiful rainforests and murder the polar bears. What we are saying is don't take radical action, expensive action, to cure a problem that may not even exist. You know, don't ruin our beautiful countryside with wind farms that are expensive and don't actually generate much power. Don't tax hard-working consumers, hard-working taxpayers who can't afford to waste money, particularly in a time of recession. Don't increase people's electricity bills unless it's absolutely necessary. The point about this story is that the science is not settled. The jury is still out. And there is a whole industry out there of people who are trying to make big sums of money. Of course, the chief villain is Al Gore, but there are hundreds of thousands of others. People are trying to make money out of this story, which has been, concocted by a small cabal of untrustworthy scientists.
James Dellingpole, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's been fantastic as ever to be on your show. Can I just tell your wonderful listeners that a lot of this stuff that I've been telling you today has been prefigured in my Nostradamus-like book I wrote earlier this year, which is called Welcome to Obamaland. I've seen your future, and it doesn't work. It's published by Regnery, and there's a particularly good chapter I recommend on this subject called Barbecue the Polar Bears. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
I told you for years that Huckabee was a huckster. I've called him Hucksterbee. And now a man whose sentence he commuted has killed in cold blood four policemen.
Here's where we're going to need the public's help. We believe that there was a struggle in there, and there's a possibility that one of the Lakewood police officers fired a shot. We're finding evidence that the suspect may be hurt, and we've already contacted local area hospitals, medical clinics, and other locations. What we need is if somebody knows somebody who has a gunshot wound or has a fresh injury and is described as a black male between 25 and 35, rough face, hair, wearing black coat jeans, and has an injury, we want to know who that is. What happened in there wasn't just a shooting, but after we believe some of the officers were shot, one of them managed to fight his way with the suspect. Fight his way, wrestle, fight all the way out the doorway until he was shot and died of a gunshot wound. We also believe there's evidence that the Lakewood police officer fired off some shots, and we hope that he hit him. And if he's hit, that means he's injured somewhere. With a gunshot wound, he's going to have to get that taken care of sometime, someplace. And when that occurs, we want to know where that person's at.
Here's Hucksterbee's pathetic response.
Should he be found to be responsible for this horrible tragedy? It'll be the result of a series of failures in the criminal justice system in both Arkansas and Washington State. He was recommended for and received a commutation of his original sentence from 1990, making him parole eligible, and then was paroled by the parole board once they determined that he met the conditions at that time.
And now Hucksterbee tries to blame it on the prosecutors.
He was arrested later for parole violation, taken back to prison to serve his full term, but prosecutors dropped the charges that would have held him. It appears that he has continued to have a string of criminal and psychotic behavior, but was not kept incarcerated by either state.
There it is, another Fox newscaster. It's unbelievably horrible. Even though Buddhism has no concept of a holy war, the doctrine of Buddhism does not at times legitimize the recourse to violence and a just war. And it doesn't matter whatever countries Buddhism has become official in. It's whether it's Theravada Buddhism in Southeast Asia or Tantric Buddhism in Tibet or East Asia. War has often been waged by Buddhists. And at present, the Buddhists of Sri Lanka have openly taken up the struggle against the Tamil freedom fighters. And so what I'm saying to you is that the American concept of Buddhism is Mickey Mouse. It's Donald Duck. People think that Buddhism is pacifist. If you listen to Richard Gere, if you listen to the Dalai Lama and those who claim there's never been a Buddhist war, they're lying to you. They're absolutely lying to you. And that is just historically not true. Wherever Buddhism has become official ideology, as I've just said to you, there have been wars. And right now, the Buddhists of Sri Lanka are fighting against the Tamil freedom fighters. So I'm not saying that there are people who look to get into war. I'm saying to you that American liberals, primarily those of Hollywood, are ignoramuses when it comes to Buddhism, when it comes to global warming, when it comes to peace, when it comes to love. They're complete and they're out of their element. Let's put it to you that way. Either it's drugs or it's hanging around with people like Larry David who never really understood anything, but they're so full of themselves. They all, yeah, you know, it's them right-wingers. Yeah, you know, Marty, we're from Brooklyn. We're better than everybody. It's them Guyam. It's those right-wingers. You know, we're better than everybody. You know, we know everything. We know everything. We run Hollywood. What are you talking about? They don't know anything. They don't know anything. They're stupid people. And then when you combine the drugs that have infested the brains of Hollywood, you understand that they're completely out of their element when they start talking about things such as Buddhism and peace and love. I am not saying Buddhists are warmongers. I am not saying that Buddhists seek violence. I'm saying the opposite. I am saying the opposite. I am saying that Buddhism compassion does extend to all beings. Did you understand all of this? I understand about karmic transmigration. I understand that to Buddhist animals are perceived as future Buddhas or past humans. I actually see the world that way, and I'm not a Buddhist. So how do you explain that? How come I can see karmic transmigration and have since I'm a child? How come I've always had compassion for animals? How come I'm not the kind of kid who put a cat on fire? How come I'm the kind of kid who brought home animals from the street? How come I'm not a Buddhist? I'm a decent human being. But the American Buddhists have a complete distortion of Buddhism being pacifist, and they get themselves in trouble and they get everyone else in trouble. The reason I'm even talking about it is because you've got Obama. He does not bring up Tibet, and all of the fraudulent liberals from Hollywood who made such a big deal out of Tibet last year when Bush, a year and a half ago when Bush was president, they've gone dead silent. The Kleeglites have gone dead. Richard Gere is nowhere to be found. Don't you understand what I'm saying to you? It's their hypocrisy that bothers me. That's what I'm saying. I was reading through a 500-page manuscript that I pulled out of my storage bin a few weeks ago called In Search of the Durian, and it's about all of my years collecting medicinal plants in the Fiji Islands and how difficult those years really were. And I look back and say to myself, why did I sacrifice some of my youth? I was 32 years old, and I was spending my own money on research, trying to better humanity. What the hell was I thinking? Why didn't I just do what all of the other boys did, you know, like sell real estate or trade in stocks or whatever? I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. What in the world was I looking for in all of these islands and all of these places, collecting plants, hoping to find a cure for this and a cure for that? And, you know, it ties right into the ban in Britain when you think about it. This just long sweep of a person's life. I mean, what is the connection? I remember Aldous Huxley wrote, I think he was quoting somebody else, life must be lived forward, but it can only be understood backward. Well, I'm not at the point where I can truly understand it backward. to the, you know, where I can't really connect the dots completely. But all of those years of traveling in and out of the islands, and frankly, I hated it. You know, I stumbled on a letter from an older scientist friend who died last year, and I told him how much I actually despise being alone in the islands collecting plants and how it was unromantic and horrible and being in the third world. I didn't like it at all. And he said to me, you know, Michael, he was a very distinguished professor of microbiology. He said to me, Michael, he said, a lot of people don't like getting up 6:30 in the morning and reporting at 9. In other words, that's your job, man. Just do it. He said, everybody hates field work. And the point is that many scientists, you know, you see national, like they love it. They don't love it. Play some music for a minute. It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.